ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Srimad Bhagavatam, 2nd Canto, Chapter 9, answers by citing the Lord's version, text 36.
Etava
Deva
Jigyasham
Tattva
Jigyasuna
Atmana
Anvaya
Gatirekhabhyam
Yat
Syat
Sarvata
Sarvata
Etavadeva
Jigyasam
Tatva Jigyasunatmana
Anvaya Gatirekhabhyam
Yat Syat Sarvata Sarvada
Etavat
up to this
Eva
certainly
Jigyasham
is to be inquired
Tatra
the absolute truth
Jigyasuna
by the student
Atmana
of the self
Anvaya
directly
Vyatirekhabhyam
indirectly
Yat
whatever
Syat
it may be
Sarvatra
in all space and time
Sarvada
in all circumstances Translation
A person who is searching after the Supreme Absolute Truth,
the personality of Godhead, must certainly search for it up to this, in all circumstances, in all space and time, and both directly and indirectly.
Can I open the window?
Purport.
To unfold the mystery of Bhakti Yoga, as is explained in the previous verse, is the ultimate stage of all inquiries or the highest objective for the inquisitive. Everyone is searching after self-realization in different ways, by karma yoga, by jnana yoga, by jnana yoga, by raja yoga, by bhakti yoga, and so forth. To engage in self-realization is the responsibility of every living entity developing consciousness. One who is developed in consciousness certainly makes inquiries into the mystery of the self, of the cosmic situation, and of the problems of life in all spheres and fields, social, political, economic, cultural, religious, moral, and so forth, and in their different branches. But here, the goal of such inquiries is explained. The Vedanta Sutra philosophy begins with this inquiry about life, and the Bhagavatam answers such inquiries up to this point for the mystery of all inquiries. Lord Brahma wanted to be perfectly educated by the personality of Godhead, and here is the answer by the Lord, finished in four nutshell verses. From Aham Eva to this verse, Etavadeva. This is the end of all self-realization processes. Men do not know that the ultimate goal of life is Vishnu or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Due to being bewildered by the glaring reflection in the darkness, and as such, everyone is entering into the darkest region of material existence, driven by the uncontrolled senses. The whole material existence has sprung up because of sense gratification. Desires based principally on the sex desire. And the result is that in spite of all advancement of knowledge,
The final goal of all the activities of living entities is sense gratification. But here's the real goal of life. And everyone should know it by inquiries put before a bona fide spiritual master, expert in the science of bhakti yoga, or from a living personality of Bhagavatam life. Everyone is engaged in various kinds of scriptural inquiries. But the Srimad Bhagavatam gives answers to all the various students of self-realization. This ultimate objective of life is not to be searched out without great labor or perseverance. One who is imbued with such sincere inquiries must ask the bona fide spiritual master in the disciplined succession from Brahmaji. And that is the direction given here. Because the mystery was disclosed before Brahmaji by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the mystery of all such inquiries regarding self-realization must be put before such a spiritual master who is directly the representative of the Lord, acknowledged in that disciplined succession. Such a bona fide spiritual master is able to clear up the whole thing by evidence from the revealed scriptures, both direct and indirect. Although everyone is free to consult the revealed scriptures in this connection, one still requires the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, and that is the direction in this verse. The bona fide spiritual master is the most confidential representative of the Lord, and one must receive direction from the spiritual master in the same spirit that Brahmaji received it from the personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna. The bona fide spiritual master is the bona fide chain of disciplined succession. The bona fide spiritual master in that bona fide chain of disciplined succession never claims to be the Lord himself, although such a spiritual master is greater than the Lord in the sense that he can deliver the Lord by his personally realized experience. The Lord is not to be found simply by education or by a good fertile brain, but surely he can be found by a sincere student through the transparent medium of the bona fide spiritual master. We're hearing that the ultimate goal of all inquiries and investigations is to understand the mystery of bhakti yoga, transcendental love and service to the Lord. This is what you all are being trained in. We are attempting here in this place to establish a culture of bhakti whereby newcomers can be attracted to render service to the senses of the Lord, and the older devotees can make further advancement in serving Krishna's senses. The older devotees can deepen their affinity for the Supreme Personality of God. And that is our goal. Everyone is searching for something. We feel incomplete, and therefore we look for fulfillment, meaning a sense of completeness. We want that from our relationships, from our activities, from our endeavors. We want to achieve a sense of completeness. In this way, you might understand that everybody is striving for self-realization, in that everyone feels a gap in their life, they feel incomplete, and they try to realize the self, however they conceive it, through their activities. They want a verification of their existence. When they engage in sense gratification, they feel that their existence is being verified. I gratify my senses, therefore I exist. It's kind of a way of knocking on wood. Yes, I gratify my senses, therefore things are solid, things are rock solid. I exist. I verify, I confirm my existence. In this way, you can see that everyone is looking for themselves, but they're doing it in the wrong way. They have been trained to look for their selves in matter and material arrangements, hoping to find fulfillment. Hoping to find fulfillment means hoping to find your real self. For example, Friday night we heard from various guests and their plans. Oh, I'll travel, or I'll do this, or I'll do that. I want fulfillment, I want love, or I want happiness. They're really looking for themselves, because you can't be peaceful unless you find yourself. But what is that self you're looking for? That self is the eternal servant of Krishna. Ekale Iswa Krishna Asavaputta. Chaitanya Charitamrita says there's only one controller, that is Krishna. Everyone else is his servant. Even the other incarnations of Godhead have the spirit of servitude to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Our self comes alive in devotional service. Without devotional service, the self is considered to be lost. In this way, the material life consists of countless people walking around, lost to themselves. But as long as they can engage in sense gratification, then they feel their existence has some solid basis, some solid substance. And you depend on other people to get this echo. You know, if you go in a long tunnel or hallway or yell down into a well, you get an echo. Even here, is there an echo? So when you hear the echo of your voice, you get confirmation. Oh, I exist. I did something. That's what you expect from sense gratification. That's what you expect from material endeavors in this world. You're looking for an echo. I exist. I did something. I'm getting a reaction from someone or something. Yeah. Like a little kid playing with toys. And sometimes, you know, like little kids, they just take the toys and smash them against the wall or something, and then just watch the reaction. You've seen this? They just, wow, look at that. You know, they just might take something and smash it against the wall and then look at it like it. Then they look at everybody else around them. Seeing what the people think about that. And then they kind of nervously laugh. Maybe it's funny. Or a little phrase, maybe I did something wrong. So this is how we live our life. We're looking around to see the reactions of others. Trying to see if we got some approval or disapproval. You surround yourself with so-called friends who you feel will give you approval for no matter what you do. If you do something really stupid, your friend will say, yeah, I did something dumb like that. Anyway, you'll get over it. If you do something that you think is very good, you want your friends to confirm that. In this way, we can see that our life is based on an echo. We want confirmation from others about our life, and then we feel strong. This is why association with devotees is so important. Since the human being wants to get this echo, you should associate with those who will give you divine feedback, divine confirmation. Yes, you're doing the right thing. The mystery of bhakti yoga is that through serving Krishna in an authorized way, the Lord's presence in everything becomes revealed. as we were saying yesterday, the mystery is not that how can Krishna be everywhere? The mystery is that Krishna is everywhere, but we don't see him. That is the mystery. Yet, if our eyes become tinged with love of Krishna, we'll see Krishna in everything. Now we should be eager to take up a process by which we can develop our love of Krishna. Since everyone loves to love, even in this degraded, distorted material world, the love experience still reigns supreme. People either live in hope for happy love or frustration because they didn't get happy love. Either way, some people are very upbeat. Yes, there's going to be love for me. I want to love. It's going to be good. And other people are on the downbeat. You know, I tried. But in either case, everyone's living in relation to that. But they want their hearts to feel complete. And so you turn to another person to get a sense of completeness. And if you don't get that, you get angry. Or if it's disturbed, you become angry. It's very important to you to feel this sense of completeness. So you select one or more persons. Okay, you are going to make me feel complete. Now just stand there and make me feel complete. This is love now, so you've got to do your part to make me feel complete. This is what I expect. And when you don't get that, then you become very paranoid. What you're really disturbed about is that you're losing your source that makes you feel complete. So when the relationship breaks down, you feel actually what's broken down is that source of completeness, and therefore you get very disturbed. Therefore, I hope everyone can understand that everyone's trying for self-realization, to fulfill themselves, to complete themselves, to verify their own existence, confirm their own existence. You'll go to school, you'll work, you'll travel, you'll enter into relationships just to get your own existence verified and to feel complete. You need other people to make you feel complete. And so you're willing to take a risk on interacting with other people to acquire that sense of completeness. You're willing to take a risk. And when you feel strong and confident about the relationship, then you reveal, please, I'm feeling so incomplete. Will you always make me feel complete? And then the other person says, yes, yes, of course, I'll always make you feel complete. In reality, each person is trying to extract out of the other person what can be all that you can get. Most of the time, these things aren't understood. Many people foolishly think that, I'm just in it for the love, and I just really care. They don't understand their own psychological inadequacies and how they're pushing these things on others in the name of love and care. They don't understand that they're looking for self-realization. They look for that in education, in work, in relationships, in sports. They're looking to feel who they are in a complete way. But that cannot be done separate from Krishna. This is the mystery of Bhakti Yoga.
The actual source of our feelings of incompleteness is ignorance of Krishna, separation from Krishna. We have the greatest emotional need. That greatest emotional need is to develop our relationship with Krishna. Ignoring that greatest emotional need, we settle for so many illusory and insubstantial things that we hope will give us the sense of completeness. The example given in the purport is bewildered by the glaring reflection in the darkness. And as such, everyone is entering into the darkest region of material existence, driven by the uncontrolled senses. Now just see yourself, driven by uncontrolled senses. Doing so many things to feel complete. In the Kali Yuga, your uncontrolled senses drive you to drink, have illicit sex, take drugs, gamble. Eat so many abominable things, looking for that sense of completeness, looking for self-realization. Even when people eat, chewing on all sorts of creatures and animals, as they sink their teeth in their chewing, they're thinking, eating this flesh, I'm getting a sense of completeness. My tongue is satisfied, so I'm all right. My life is okay, because my tongue is satisfied. Just think about that. Driven by uncontrolled senses. And you see that? In your non-devotional life, how the uncontrolled senses were driving you. Go here, go there, do this, do that. Most people cannot see it. They think they're choosing to do so many things, when actually they're being driven by their senses. And where are their senses driving them? Where are their uncontrolled senses driving them? To the darkest region of material existence. Material existence is bad enough, but to be driven by your uncontrolled senses to the darkest region of material existence? And what's bewildering you? What's making you do all these crazy things and waste your life? There is a glaring reflection in the darkness. Have you ever seen a glaring reflection in the darkness? Let's say you walk down a dark alley or a dark street, and maybe there's some light coming from somewhere, even the moon, and that light reflects off the bumper of a car, and it makes a reflection in the dark street or the dark alley. You seen that? Well, this is what we're pursuing. We're not pursuing the original light. We're pursuing that reflection, just like the moonlight shining off of a car bumper on a dark street. So instead of going for the moonlight, we go for that reflection coming off the bumper. Now, does the car still have chrome bumpers, or now it's all rubber or something? Well, some part of the car, the moonlight shines off of, maybe the frame surrounding the headlights or something. Some glint of light, indirect. This is what we're pursuing. And therefore we're frustrated because that reflection cannot satisfy us.
The mystery of Bhakti Yoga allows us to see Krishna's presence in everything. That is satisfying. Krishna explained that to Lord Brahma. He enters in to everything. At the same time, he has his independent personality and he has his independent abode where his activities are going on. To learn how to see Krishna in everything, that is real enlightenment. What does the Lord say in Bhagavad Gita? For one who sees me in everything, and everything in me, I am never lost to him, and he's never lost to me. Krishna teaches this personally. He's teaching that to Lord Brahma, and saying, you should search for this understanding in all circumstances, in all space and time, and both directly and indirectly. What does the Lord mean by directly and indirectly? That means understand the things that directly contribute to your enlightenment and understand the things that impede it. That's direct and indirect. You must search for the Supreme Absolute Truth, the Personality of Godhead, who is present everywhere and at the same time has his own personal pastimes and his personal birth. Your duty to search is the meaning of your life. Krishna taught this to Brahma. And Krishna also teaches that to his intimate devotees in Vrindavan. He sent Uddhava to Vrindavan to teach this to the gopis and to Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yasoda. The Lord showed that he's always concerned with his devotees. The residents of Vrindavan were suffering in separation from Krishna. So the Lord asked his dear devotee Uddhava to please go to Vrindavan and deliver a message so that the pain and separation of the residents of Vrindavan would be soothed. And also the Lord was using Uddhava to study the situation in Vrindavan, to study the love in Vrindavan and bring back a report to Mathura. Because there is nothing like the love of the residents of Vrindavan. Uddhava would deliver a message, and Uddhava would also get to study the love. Have you ever seen any love in this material world worth studying? But the love of the residents of Vrindavan for Krishna is incomparable. Lord Chaitanya has certified Ramya touched it upasana braja badu bhagavanina kalpa. There's no greater method of loving Krishna than that shown by the cowherd damsels of Vrindavan. For this reason, Krishna sent Uddhava to Vrindavan to teach the residents that actually, Krishna is never gone. And also, Krishna wanted Uddhava to learn about this highest standard of love of God, completely devoid of awe and reverence. You remember yesterday's verse, how the Lord said to Brahma, just like the elements enter into the cosmos and then again they don't. Similarly, I enter into everything, yet at the same time, I don't, because I have my independent private abode. Impersonalists think that if the Absolute Truth enters into everything, then the Absolute Truth has become dissipated. If I have a cup of water and I spread the water all over this room, you know there'll be no more water left in the cup. But Krishna is not material. Krishna is avyaya, inexhaustible, and aprameya, immeasurable. So Krishna can being everything, and still he doesn't lose his identity. Bhakti Yoga will teach you how to see everything as belonging to Krishna, and then everything will remind you of Krishna. People try for this experience in their paltry dealing in the material world. Oh, there's always something to remind me of you. They get a kick out of things like that. Of course, things are so gross these days. These material subtleties have become lost. Uddhava was sent by the Lord to Vrindavan to teach the residents that everything reminds you of Krishna. Therefore, Krishna is not love. Who did Uddhava first meet to teach? Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yasoda. They were always staggered by separation from Krishna. When Uddhava first encountered Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yasoda, they invited him into their home. And they ask questions, how are things in Mathura? You've heard that Vasudev is now free from captivity. We've also the cowherd girls, his cowherd boyfriends, the residents of Vrindavan, does he remember us? Krishna knew that that was their concern. That's why he sent Uddhava. The Lord is always eager to reciprocate with his devotee. This is something that you'll gradually experience as you advance in bhakti yoga. Krishna is eager to let you know that bhakti yoga is the highest thing. Krishna will reciprocate with you if you show how dedicated you are to his service. You'll get that corroboration, that confirmation that Krishna exists and he's accepting your service. So the spiritual master is meant to teach how you can receive the attention of the Lord by devotional service. Uddhava is playing the part of the spiritual master to the residents of Vrindavan. Although actually, Uddhava knows there's nothing that can compare to the love of Krishna that the residents of Vrindavan have. So Nanda Maharaj is asking Uddhava how things are going. Does Krishna remember us? Does he remember Gokula? Does he remember Govardhan Hill? You see, the basis of his inquiry was, how can Krishna be fully happy outside of Vrindavan? Not possible. And then Nanda Maharaj explained that. When we think of Krishna's pastimes, our material activities slacken. You'll see this effect immediately in Krishna consciousness. By your sincere endeavors to serve Krishna and by your remembering of Krishna's activities, your propensity for material activities diminishes. This is the direct result of hearing about Krishna's pastime. Something else is satisfying you instead of those pungent, spicy material activities. Like now, what kind of reaction do you feel thinking what it'd be like to eat something with heaps of onions on top of it? Heaps of onions and garlic. It's just too pungent. You know that word pungent? Everyone knows that word pungent? It's just too
here. I don't know another word for pungent.
Huh? Well, certainly it's gross. It's too crude. Strongly crude and gross. That's pungent. So if I said to you, here's a big heaping plate of onions and garlic. Well, I feel horrible eating that stuff. The smell is so strong and it'll burn my stomach. Get me agitated and so passionate. I remember once in Malaysia, one Indian young lady told me, I always put lots of onions and garlic and hot spices in my husband's food just to keep him agitated. It's a fact. Those things, they burn in your stomach and increase your lust. So if I say to you, here's a heaping plate of onions and garlic, well, I don't want that feeling. I don't want that smell. I don't want that feeling in me. Onions and garlic. Similarly, by hearing Krishna's pastimes, you get that same reaction about all material activities. I don't want that effect in my life. I don't want that effect on my consciousness. Nanda Maharaj has testified that he certified that by hearing Krishna's pastimes, your material activities slacken. You don't have that same lust and yearning for material expression that you did before. Maybe this is the first thing that your friends and relatives noticed about you when you started to become Krishna conscious. Anyone have that experience? Kind of noticed, like, well, where's your material punch? What happened? You notice? What do they say to you? You didn't even tell her you're into Krishna consciousness, but she just noticed. What's going on with you? She knew you were what? Something a bit different, because you don't have that material pizzazz anymore. That aggressive, exploitative attitude. So what did she say to you? You've lost it. You've lost that karmic feeling. Anyone else? What did she say to you? But she didn't know, but she just said, you've changed. Did she elaborate? And she didn't even know. That's amazing. Anyone else?
I used to hang out with my friends in India. My friends became online and they were
changed. Land of Dharma.
I'd like to talk about the Krishna, and I'm chanting these days. He's saying at this point, but you remember that and I am trying to get it back on And then after some time, he wrote that he looks sexy. Why is it that? Because you're not talking about the girl. Why don't you put this? Are you sad in your life?
Anyone else? I remember I had a friend. My mate for the time, and he, you know, I'd known him for several years. I didn't tell him I was getting into Krishna consciousness.
reading the books 4 hours a day. I remember one day he just came up to me and said, "What's come over you? You've changed. I'm going to have to find a new running buddy." That's what they call it. Another slang. I'm going to have to find a new mate. I mean, what, you know, you just don't have that. What's happened to you, you know? I didn't even say anything to him. This is the effect of Krishna consciousness. And Nanda Maharaj in Vrindavan, he's telling Uddhava, by discussing Krishna's pastimes, our material activities slacken. Of course, Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda have no material activities, but they're saying like that. And what else did he say? By looking at the places where Krishna had his pastimes, where Krishna walked, seeing his footprints on the ground, our minds become absorbed in him. And then he began to describe all things Krishna did. He protected us from so many dangers. He killed so many demons. Then Uddhava looked over at Mother Yashoda and saw she was not opening her eyes. She was simply crying. She wouldn't even look at Uddhava, because ever since Krishna left Vrindavan, she would just cry with her eyes closed and would not see any other face except Krishna's face. So hearing Nanda Maharaj describe Krishna, milk was flowing from her breasts, tears were flowing from her eyes, together. Nanda Maharaj asked Uddhava, "Will Krishna even come back one time?" He had given up hope that Krishna would stay in Vrindavan again, but he was thinking, "Will he come back and visit just one time? We want to see his beautiful face, the raised nose, the smile." When Uddhava saw the intense grief of Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj, actually, it looks like pain, emotional pain and physical pain, but it's part of the ecstasy of love of Krishna. This is how complete the experience of love of God is. Even so-called pain is ecstasy. That's real completeness. Now, what happens in your mundane relationships when you've been hurt, wounded? Can you say that pain is ecstasy? Another form of ecstasy? When someone you cared for or gave yourself to or trusted hurt you, and you say, "Oh, this is just another type of loving ecstasy." But in the spiritual world, you can say that in reference to Krishna. This is a mystery, how the so-called feelings of pain and separation are another type of transcendental ecstasy. Uddhava observed this in Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda. And so he told them, "There's none more fortunate than you two, because you have achieved the perfection of meditation on Krishna. I can see your level of absorption is unparalleled." Then Uddhava began to explain to them that you're yearning for your son, but actually Krishna is no one's son. Then again, he's everyone's son. He's no one. No one is his mother and father. Then again, Krishna is everyone's mother and father. He's everywhere and in everything. He's the creator and he's the creative potency simultaneously. He's the seed of all existence and he's also the womb of all existence.
There's nothing that you can see in the past, present, or future that's independent of Krishna. There's nothing that exists anywhere that's independent of Krishna. Indeed, Krishna is present everywhere as the Super Soul, just as fire is present in wood. This is the Vedic conception. How fire is present in wood, even though the wood is not ignited. And by igniting the wood, you bring the fire out. It's a different way of looking at things. From the Western point of view, you're taught that when you ignite the wood or it becomes hot, you're kind of like adding the fire to it. But the Vedic viewpoint is that the fire is dormant in the wood and you do something to bring out the fire. Just a different viewpoint. You can't say one is wrong and one is right. It's just a different way of looking at things which you never thought of before. Similarly, Krishna consciousness is not added to you from without. It's ignited in you. It's already there. There's nothing more natural for you to do than become Krishna conscious. Nanda Maharaj, Uddhava pointed this out to Nanda Maharaj. Krishna is in everything. Everything is in Krishna. In this way, he's pointing out to Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj that you're never separated from Krishna. He's in everything. Everything is in him. And Uddhava also explained this later, the next day, to the gopis. How love of Krishna is mixed with all the aspects and elements of creation. In this way, on the highest level of bhakti yoga, everything you see is Krishna because everything reminds you of Krishna. Any questions? Mm-hmm. Where's the source of your desires? The complete desiring potency comes from the soul. But that desiring potency is pervertedly reflected through matter. So material desires are a perversion. You wouldn't like someone to call you a pervert, would you? But in material life, everyone is a pervert. They're trying to enjoy pervertedly. So the material desires are the energy of the soul as expressed through matter, through the three modes of material nature. For example, what are you desiring? Name a material desire. Anything. Now, you're desiring the ice cream. What do you hope from that ice cream? A good taste for your tongue. And in this way, you hope your life will improve, right? Because you had a good taste on your tongue, right? Yes. Yes, you hope your life, you have to recognize it, you hope your life will improve. And as I said before, you're looking for a feeling of completeness. You're feeling a lack, an emptiness, and therefore you think, how about some ice cream on my tongue? That'll make me feel complete. Just think about this and try to put this analysis into action during your day. You're striving for completeness and self-realization in matter, in material activities, in material desires. You have a sense of incompleteness and emptiness, therefore you have to go outside of yourself to get things. I need an ice cream to add to my life. Right? Or let's say you meet a girl somewhere. You check her out. What does it mean to check her out? Can she add to my life, and can I feel wholesome with her, even for a few moments? Can I take something from her which is going to bolster my ego? Even if it's just the feeling of a one-night conquest, you want your ego bolstered, right?
Yeah.
Right? At least you hope to get that. And sometimes thinking, maybe more, maybe this could be a lasting relationship of a month or so, which will, you know, which will kind of enhance my personal existence and kind of make me feel more in touch with reality. Sometimes people even say that to each other. Let's just kind of explore each other and see, you know. That just means we feel incomplete. Let's see if we can help each other to feel complete. And then what happens when you realize it doesn't happen like that? It doesn't work like that. Right? And you find an excuse to get away from the person. I think last time I was here, you were telling me some of the excuses you give when you want to get away from the person. I need some space. What else? It's not you, it's me. So charitably take the blame on yourself. You're all right, it's just me. My issues have come up. I'm just trying to deal with myself, you know? It's not you, it's me. What else? You know any others? No, you know any other excuses you give once you realize that the person's not going to make you feel complete and you want to back away? Just run away, you know? 1 minute you're there, then you take off, huh? So the ladies see the men doing that, and they say, well, we'll do the same thing, right? Right? What's good for them is good for us, right? It's all equal, right? Right? We'll be girls who have fun. Why should we just, you know, stand around and let the men use us? We'll use them. We'll pick them up and throw them down like toy dolls, you know? In this way, everyone's life becomes disrupted. And then we get so many young men and women coming to Krishna consciousness who have no idea of what family life is from a material point of view. No idea how to make a stable family. All they know is when you feel sex desire, the opposite sex should be there. That's their understanding of family. Oh, you're feeling some lust, I'm feeling some lust, let's shack up. That's the bait, that's the be-all and end-all of the relationship. I'm a bit lonely. Let's have some fun together. We'll go to a few places, we'll talk a bit. At some point, women being women, they want to have children. They have that nesting and nurturing propensity. And then they think, oh, well, it doesn't have to be a stable, lasting relationship to have children, you know? The children are for me. So then as soon as they have the kids, they just ice the guy. Someone was telling me yesterday, as soon as he had two children with his wife, she just said, okay, move into another room. And he just became like, you know, you know, just the gardener or something, and she does, you know, entertain herself with her children. We get these young men and women coming to Krishna consciousness from this kind of background and culture in which no one even knows how to have a material family. No idea of family unity and stability. And makes problems in trying to get our young men and women properly married because they don't know what's it about. Think about this the next time as you go about your day, how you're looking for self-realization in matter and material arrangements. You want that feeling of that you're existing and that you have completeness and fulfillment through matter and material arrangements. By hearing Krishna's pastimes, that kind of ambition will slacken, and your material activities themselves will slacken. You know what it means to slacken your grip? You're holding something very tightly, and then you just slacken your grip. That's what happens to your grip on material nature when you hear about Krishna's pastimes. Why don't you read Bhagavad Gita and quote Bhagavad Gita? Do you have difficulty just taking Bhagavad Gita as it is? Do you feel restricted? Do you feel restricted in your life by taking Bhagavad Gita as it is? Do you feel that your possibilities are being limited? Like what, for example? I'm simply saying, why don't you study Bhagavad Gita? See what Krishna says. There's no different interpretations of Bhagavad Gita. Your problem is that you avoid becoming Krishna conscious by splaying out in these different directions. It's your backhanded way of avoiding. That's what's going on. Just like Prabhupada once explained. Now, you say Krishna, and someone says, well, why Krishna? Why do you have to do like that? It is. But that pride and egotism of avoiding Krishna can be cleansed just by hearing and chanting about Krishna and engaging in Krishna's service. You don't have to adopt material methods to crush your ego. That's impersonalism. Therefore, I was explaining what Nanda Maharaj says in the 10th canto of Bhagavatam. Just by thinking of Krishna's pastimes, our material activities slacken. It is impersonalism to take shelter of jnana, metaphysical knowledge, and austerities to diminish the false ego. Actually, the material ego doesn't become diminished. Because what is at the root of this attempt? It's still avoiding Krishna. Don't worry, Krishna. I'll take care of my ego my way. There's still the false ego. But when you take shelter of Krishna, you get the positive and negative results simultaneously. That's why Krishna is telling Brahma, search for the absolute truth, both directly and indirectly. Bhakti yoga does that. Directly the positive and indirectly the negative. And Lord Kapila Dev explains in the third canon of Bhagavatam that devotional service, bhakti yoga, dissolves the false ego, just like the digestive fluids in the stomach dissolve the food. So this is impersonalism, which is simply a disguised rebellion against Krishna. You can't take it straight on. I don't know if you have much experience, but others probably know. It's like, let's say there's a relationship between man and woman, and the girl keeps asking the man, don't you think it's time to get married? And the man always says, well, you know what? I talked to Bill yesterday, and, you know, he was a... yeah. You know, I was talking to Steve the other day, and I just never, you know... What does the lady think after all that, you know? Obviously, he's trying to avoid her. Don't you, you know, don't you think it's time, you know, we had a commitment and married? Well, you know, I was just surfing on the internet the other day. And in a lot of countries, you know, marriage isn't happening anymore. It's just avoidance. Because there's fear of a personal relationship for whatever reason. Similarly, we have this fear of Krishna. So what is all this avoidance doing for you? I don't see it doing any good for you. That's what I'm saying. It's foolish rebellion. You can see it has no constructive value, right? It's very easy how to avoid this. You focus on what Krishna teaches in Bhagavad Gita. Put it into action, you'll get the result. Focus on Bhagavad Gita as it is. You have Prabhupada's books. There's no greater knowledge. Our devotees from India can tell you there's a, you know, there's Maharajas and Bubbas and Guru Mahas in every village. You want to search all of India? Go through every village, you know. You'll never get to the end of it. There's an incarnation of God on every street. There's a temple for everything under the sun, you know? So if you want to go about it in this way, you'll be totally bewildered and waste your life. Who can say? Well, I was surfing on the internet and it says this person was chanting... As soon as she came out of the womb, and you hear it all in India. This lady was a brahmachari since birth, or whatever. It's just, you know, anything. We're not concerned with what a lot of people say. We are concerned with what Krishna says. That is the difference. We are concerned with what Purushottama, the Supreme Person, says. Not a lot of little bewildered jivatmas, conditioned souls. Even Brahma becomes humbled by Krishna. Even Indra becomes humbled by Krishna. What to speak of these tiny fools of Kali Yuga? You're hearing testimony from Brahma here. The Adi Kavi, the original scholar of the universe. So you have to set your priorities right. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is giving you reason why you should hear from him. everything. I am the source of everything material and spiritual. Those are his qualifications. Therefore, Krishna can actually give you knowledge about existence, because all of existence, both material and spiritual, emanates from him. So it's good you want to hear from a person, but you have to understand who is the supreme person. Otherwise, you'll get a different opinion from every fool in Kali Yuga. And sometimes it may be mixed, you know, something good. Impersonalists in India can really fool you, because they'll sit down and chant Hare Krishna in front of you. And you'll think, oh, this is bhakti. But what are they thinking? This is a device to use for entering into the oneness that's beyond Krishna. As soon as you say beyond Krishna, you've said something insane. It doesn't make sense. What does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? Mata pratra nanya. There's nothing beyond me. Everything rests on me. Like pearls are strung on a thread. This is what I mean. Latent impersonalism is the problem. I've realized that more and more. This is what's affecting the Western world now. I was explaining, I think, to you how in the 70s, devotees of Krishna in the West were afflicted by so many impersonalists coming out of India. Now it's not like it anymore. The main affliction is Western-born impersonalists who captured the market. And these impersonalists make it practically impossible for you to hear directly from Krishna, because, well, you know, you just can't focus, because there's got to be something else. Meaning there's got to be something beyond Krishna. One person just can't give you everything. This is a material speculation. Real spiritual perfection is just to kind of zone out, you know, just the light, the all-pervading. But Krishna? Oh, that's a body. That's a form with activity. Oh, it's limiting. Sectarian. So you're actually affected by impersonalism, is your problem. But so much so, even though you're chanting Hare Krishna, you refuse to settle down. That means you're chanting Hare Krishna like an impersonalist. Go on chanting in spite of that, and you beg Krishna to purify you of this disease so you can better appreciate Krishna's devotees and not stop wasting your time listening to every unqualified or slightly qualified person. You figure out why you're trying to avoid Krishna. And as you know, waste your time. A lot of people can say so many things. I remember, I told you, I think, I was in Ecuador speaking, and besides the Ecuadorianos there, the people of Ecuador, there were a few persons from India there. They go everywhere in the world looking wherever there's some import-export opportunity. I tell you this? After the talk, the people from India came up to me. Have you heard of Sai Baba? I said, no. Who's that? You haven't heard? Don't know. No, I don't know who he is. Sorry, I just, you know, don't let me know. I've been to India 50 times, and, you know, there's a Baba in every village. I don't know more. So many Babas. You don't know Sai Baba? No. He looked at me very seriously. He is God. So I looked back at them very seriously and said, Well then, I'm the Queen of England. Well, I didn't know what to make of it. You know, he was like, yeah. They couldn't say I was being an offender to this Baba because I said I didn't know him. Well, I, you know, well, they said he was God, and I said, I'm the Queen of England. So they were kind of like, this doesn't sound quite right, but they just, you know, they were just kind of bewildered, like, you know. So, you know, they were kind of like, you know, just couldn't, their computer locked up, you know, they were just like, so they just went away. And the next day they came back to talk to me. And I just told one devotee, no, I don't want to talk. Be pointless. There's so much going on. But in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is speaking to you, saying, Satatam Kirtiantamam, always chant my glory. So you have to deal with this rascal nature of yours. Mischievous for no purpose, suffering, bewildered, miserable, still you're going to blah, 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 blah. This is pride. This is Kali Yuga. Got nothing good going for you, right? Even materially, right? Right? Engage in devotional service and you can become a dear devotee of Krishna, without doubt. Anything else? Mm-hmm. When we're suffering, we can. You can. We're not masochists. You don't have to pray that Krishna sends you calamities, you know. Life is bad enough already. Just try to deal with the calamities that you already have. The number one calamity is you have a material body, material desires. That's bad enough. So you pray to Krishna that you can always think of his pleasure, his service. The point is that Queen Kunti was so attached to Krishna that if calamities would make Krishna stay with her, then she's saying, let there be calamities. She's attached to Krishna, not the calamities. But she's just noting, well, if it's so that Krishna stays when there are calamities, then let there be calamities. Not that she's attached to calamities like a masochist. Now, it's true that for ignorant persons, they only think of God when there is some disaster. And as soon as the disaster fades, they forget God. Bhakti Yoga trains you to see Krishna in all circumstances, so-called happiness and so-called distress. You should understand the real disaster is forgetting Krishna. That's the real calamity. But by attentive chanting of the holy name, you can remember Krishna in all circumstances. Remembering Krishna means that in all circumstances you are dedicated to fulfilling Krishna's desires, even seemingly at your expense. But it's not at your expense, it just seems that way. Krishna's desires include you, but it seems that it's at your expense. This is the battle you fight. Just like yesterday you were talking about, sometimes it's a battle. That battle, that psychological sense of a battle is there because you think, or the thought comes to you sometimes, that serving Krishna is at your expense. This is the Maya broadcast. It's not at your expense. Krishna's self-interest includes your interest. So here, besides introducing people to Krishna's service, we also want our older devotees to go deeper into rendering service with love and devotion. Conscientiously do the so-called little things with more and more dedication and devotion. So you pray, my dear Krishna, please let me allow me to assist my spiritual master in serving you. And a whole unlimited world of internal development will open up, even while you're doing the so-called same chores, cleaning, cooking, whatever. And of course, there's the unlimited ocean of Sankirtan, the unlimited ocean of hearing and chanting about Krishna. Your future has just begun. Anyone else? You think about what I already said. When you're in the pit of the city absorbed in material activities, you can easily ignore yourself. But when you're out in the country, there's nowhere to hide from your miserable existence, your miserable self-existence. Yes, these psychological things are there. Chant Hare Krishna and feel Krishna's presence always with you. And always associate with devotees. And you won't be alone. Start deciding what your future will be. You want to be a Brahmacharya, what do you want to be? Decide what you want to be for how much time. You understand? Decide what you want to be and for how long. You want to be a Brahmacharya for some years or all your life or whatever, something. Come forward a bit. Take up a Krishna-conscious lifestyle. Come in a bit more from the outskirts of town. I call it the contemporary Vedic ashram. The transit lounge at the airport. You ever been to a transit lounge at the airport? You're not quite in the country, you know. You're not allowed entrance. You're just, you know, a temporary space. Yeah, that we already have going on. But now I'm telling you, maybe you should start to push forward a bit. What do you think? Start thinking about it.
I mean, you've only been studying your sadhana for 4 months, so. But you start thinking about it. Make progress. Be progressive. Just don't think you have to stay the way you are, you know, in your little marked world. Maybe you can make a few baby steps forward, huh? Without risk, without fear. You've been around long enough to know that, you know, you're not entering into a dragon's mouth or something. Yeah. You can take bigger steps too, but at least take little steps. Oh, you're 39. What do you got to lose? Hmm? What do you got to lose? Your bread business? Make nice bread anywhere. Got no girlfriend, right? No friends, right? Outside of the devotees, right? Mm. Now you're admitting. He wouldn't say it before, now he's admitting. They sense you've got the Krishna disease. You're dealing with that person they came into the material world to avoid. It's like, you know, you're a criminal with your criminal friends, and then all of a sudden, you know, they realize you're working for the police. They thought of warning you like the plague. Yeah. So you're making advancement. So now come closer. They're not steps, they're characteristics. Yeah, that's the main thing for all of us. Well, those characteristics we were reading yesterday were characteristics of someone in ecstatic love. Got a while to go for that. Still, there's no doubt you should be thinking how you can get your life more together, because you've got nothing to lose. You don't have any kids, you don't have any girlfriend, you don't have any wife, you don't have any friends anymore. You've been abandoned by material society. Yeah, all right, so in these circumstances you can easily render good service to Krishna, because you don't have to go through so many complications. What options? What are your options? Well, there's no doubt. If you can't, even if you think you want to marry in the future, a few years of, you know, training, if there's actually going to be some training. Not that you become a brahmachari just by putting on saffron clothes and going to train. No doubt a few years that will do your world the good. And just bear in mind that
because someone may want to get married doesn't mean that, you know, automatically happens. It has to be a suitable victim, you know.
Don't think that, you know, you become Krishna conscious and absorbed in devotional service and that automatically guarantees you, you know, a partner.
Hey, you know.
There's no verse in Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says that. Come to me and I promise you'll have a Vedic queen. You know, we do the best we can. But our main, you know, this is not a marriage bureau. Please understand that. This is not a marriage bureau. We help out, you know, as best we can, but your main purpose is to be Krishna conscious. Marriage means money. You've got to be ready to, you know, work out some bucks. You want to do that? It'll be more than your bread business can handle. Huh? You ready for all that? Work and money, bills. Not just paying for yourself, but paying for someone else, at least one other person. You ready for that? Yeah, I appreciate all that, but for that material arrangement, even though it can have spiritual purposes, you've got to pay. So this is what I mean. It's not that, you know, marriage means, well, I just want someone coming to be close to me, give me that Krishna conscious feeling. There's a bit more to it than that, you know? I always repeat the mantra my mother told me when I was a little boy, so I never had a chance to use. Romance without finance is a nuisance. You all like that one? Otherwise, so many men, you know, get there. Yeah, I just want someone close to me in Krishna consciousness. Yeah. You know, there's much more to it than that, you know. Yeah, and so many ladies, you know.
Yeah, I just, I feel like I want to marry you now.
Okay, that's nice, you have that feeling, but, you know, there has to be a material arrangement, you know. So you have to think, you're 39, maybe, you know, you might, you know, maybe you can do without all those complexities. Huh? Maybe life would be easier for you. You have to see the reality. So many older householders tell me that what the number one thing that destroys marriages is the fantasies, the false expectations. You just load up that other person with your false expectations. You're going to do it for me. You're going to make me feel complete. You're going to be the acharya. You're going to be this. You're going to be the source of all money. You are it. Doesn't work out that way. Sooner or later, you find out, hey, we're both conditioned souls. Still, there's no doubt. Statistically, most men and women choose marriage. So what we try to do here is make sure you don't have any fantasies when you embark upon that path. Do you have any fantasies, Kate?
Yeah. isn't it a relief to without having to carry the baggage of all those fantasies? Then you could just be practical. All right. Woman wants man wants woman, so let's, make a go of it while, concentrating our main business of being Krishna conscious.
Okay. You are going to be my Krishna. You are going to fulfill everything. You're going to do everything perfectly. You're going to reciprocate me perfectly. My every pain you're going to notice before I even feel it.
Well, I was talking to one couple and I was at Rotorua, and the lady was saying how she insists that when she feels pain, she wants her husband to feel that pain too. That's a real relationship. And of course, what do you think the husband says about that? Hey, come here, radical. I'll give you a solution. I'll tell you how to solve your problems. But why do I want to feel the pain you're going through? Especially when I know it's unnecessary. No. I want you to feel it too. This is the false expectations, the fantasies. I want you to go through what I'm going through.
I don't want to go through that, especially when I know it's unnecessary. It's due to you being impractical. Just take my solution, you'll be saved.
So maybe you're being spared from all that.
It's not that you just feel some desire and then you get married. You got to understand. You have to be able to pay for it. And you have to, first of all, you got to find somebody who's, you have to find a willing victim. Or you think that the way it works around here is that sooner or later everybody gravitates towards someone and it all works out like that. Is that what you think? I mean, we do our best to keep everybody happy, but, so many factors involved. We check the astrological compatibility. We see that the person's had enough time to indicate stability in Krishna consciousness. One person who's demonstrating instability. So, not a good match for someone who's been stable. The astrological compatibility is very nice, but the stability part is evidently not matching. There's so many factors. Or you can find someone who doesn't mind, just living day to day in a one room apartment. Good luck. I think it's more important to get training in spiritual culture. Well, you don't have a clue what you're going to do. This is the difference between India and abroad. People from India still more or less have their lifestyle knowledge intact. They have a very matter-of-fact understanding about how family, marriages should go on. But outside of India, forget it.
It's like in India, they have a mantra. Never marry the woman you love. Love the woman that you marry. So duty and commitment is much more important than romance. The romance fades very quickly, like lightning in the sky, but the duty and commitment is what forms the basis of a real relationship and a real appreciation. But, you know, the Western view is, you know, who do you feel for right now? Who kind of satisfies that gnawing feeling at the bottom of your stomach? That's the one for you. Maybe it's better to look for training first, rather than simply feel, well, I'm lonely, and yeah, maybe after some time, you know, there'll be somebody here who's also feeling lonely. I would hope your life would be more progressive than that. Although it's true, if you want to stay at that level, then we can help by looking for somebody else who's also on that level. Drifting type person, you know. You know what I mean? Basically, what I'm telling everyone is you have to be for real about your life. Life's a series of decisions, so you got to try to do the best you can to make the best decision. That's your responsibility to Krishna. There's always going to be things outside of your control or unforeseen things, no doubt. But you have the responsibility to do the best you can in terms of decision making. Then you can say, all right, the rest, what can you do?